the famous McNulty family. Friends, you are listening to The Flannelly Show live from New York, and you're probably listening to us on the internet, indeed, on irishradio.com, and we're going to go to Belfast. We are going to go to somebody that whose judgment we really appreciate. Quentin Oliver is the director of Stratagem, having established that company in 1998 following the Good Friday Belfast Agreement. We caught up with Quentin Oliver quite early. It was just I think about the time of the founding of your company that we were introduced, and we're delighted, Quentin Oliver, to have maintained our affiliation all through the years. First of all, you're welcome.
Thank you, Adrian. Good afternoon from a sunny Belfast.
Oh, great. Yeah, we're not doing too badly here. And apparently, according to Kevin O'Connor, our news correspondent, things are all beautiful around there too. So, wow, let's not jinx it. Of all the times and the periods covered, which you have, as a valuable contributor to our program, yesterday, for you, and, a political strategist, what were your expectations when, for the third time and last chance, Theresa May, Prime Minister of Britain, got shot down, not by a squeaker vote, but a walloper of a vote, not even close? What was your first reaction? What were your expectations, maybe, first?
Well, since it was the third vote, and since nothing had appeared to change significantly, no one was really expecting a triumphant or even a narrow success. It seems to be the strategy of third time lucky, let's cross our fingers and keep going. So in that sense, it was a bit of an anticlimax. But it does show on Brexit Day, which was meant to be Brexit Day after that referendum nearly 3 years ago, that we are in an omni-shambles because of the multiple alternative positions. Now, that's unusual in the UK context, because usually it's unwritten constitution and its mother of parliaments balanced with a government as the executive can get through big issues from war to building the health service in peacetime Britain. But this one has really flummoxed the British system. And we look on with, it would be with wry amusement if it were not so important for the border on this island that they are lost. And the 8 votes they had during the week had produced no clear and no clear majority. So they're in a mess. We're in a mess here, as I predicted on this program 2 years ago, Adrian, I think I was on about the deep damage that the Brexit debate was doing for unionism and nationalism and dividing us again on this island. So now we do only have 12 days to get something sorted out.
Yeah, what is the... we were of the opinion anyway... that yesterday was D-Day. Where did the next 12 days come from? Was that decided before yesterday? Would that have happened with or without?
Yes. There had been a grace period granted. Now, as you'll have heard, the European Union isn't keen to keep on granting short extensions. So the next real deadline is April the 10th, so it's 2 days before the 12th to make sure any agreement is put in place by the 12th. And that was passed into British law. The 12th was in the recent past. So they've got 10 days to find another arrangement, which looks like either a fairly lengthy extension, which is what the European Union wants, and that will cause some difficulties for some of the Brexit adherents who feel that it might slip through their fingers if there's an extension for a year or more. And it means that the May 22nd date of the European elections becomes a challenge. So does the UK go back into election mode, which we had assumed we wouldn't have to do, and fight the 81 seats for the European Parliament? Or is there some sort of waiver on that because the extension is about serious negotiation and therefore we will still be exempted from the elections and the extra seats? And remember, other European member states are getting extra seats from the UK redistribution. So that's why, for example, Dublin has got an extra seat, and you may have noticed that Mark Durkin, former leader of the SDLP, is running for Fine Gael in Dublin. So that seat may not actually materialise. So he could have been a candidate yesterday, but no longer one tomorrow if the UK decides it will take part in the European elections.
Friends, you are listening to the Flannelly Show live in New York, and we are simulcasting, broadcasting live throughout the world. I would like, again, to let you know that our guest, Quentin Oliver, he actually led the Yes campaign for the Good Friday Belfast Agreement referendum back in 1998, before developing stratagem, creative initiatives to serve corporations and to serve governments throughout the world. Quentin, I want to ask you, because obviously at times like this, we have to assume there'll be enough blame to go around and finger-pointing and political opportunities which over the next 12 days aren't going to help things that matter. But where is the crack? The crack in the egg. Where is that, and can that be, revamped, repaired?
In the British system, yes. I mean, it is being tested almost to destruction, but they are trading arguments and not trading blows. So that's the solidity of the British system, where they have taught themselves into gridlock because of so many different positions. Now, we used to have that about our conflict here in this island, about the national question, about the different alternative solutions. And then through the 90s, we focused it down and pushed it down to an agreed way forward that then the people endorsed in that referendum. That required trade-offs. It required compromises from the different sides. Now, the British system isn't terribly good in these circumstances at producing that result, but undoubtedly it will. My view is there will be a delay. There will probably be a general election in the UK that will reshuffle the pack. It's hard to see what the result will be at the moment because the parties haven't developed their positions. But they will reshuffle the pack, they will get a government with a stronger mandate, and a compromise will be voted through, and Britain will look back, whatever the result, and say, well, we just about scraped through that disaster of a constitutional nature. They may end up getting a written constitution because the weaknesses of the unwritten constitution have been shown, especially in parliamentary terms in the last month, where they really haven't been able to devise methods to deal with this particular issue because they don't have it written down. So I think they might end up with a written constitution. And that, in turn, might help the relationship with Scotland, Wales and Ireland, because that's never been written down. That always has to be argued out at every time. and that's why the perfect storm of Scottish nationalism on the rise, with their referendum in 2014 reaching 45%, and now talk of a border poll on this island again, the first since 1973. So the perfect storm is about what is the UK and how does it hang together. You've got Brexit and how does the UK relate to the Europe and other countries. There's the international recession and meltdown, which we were just about coming through after 10 years of austerity, and all this happening at the same time hasn't been easy to handle, and that's why it will need calm heads and steady nerve to take us through the rest of this year.
Now, the suggestion, the threat of a general election, is that a red herring? I mean, how the hell could there be a general election anytime soon? Because now, whatever way it goes, you're going to be dealing with new players, and how long is the European Union going to wait? Wouldn't it be kind of as easy for the European Union to do one of two things? I just say, you want to know something? Why don't you just peg off? Because, you know, we've given you all the time in the world. Or the European Union could say, all right, it's obvious that there's going to be a general election, and that's going to happen soon. So why don't we just stop the clock right now and take the pressure off?
Yes, the most likely outcome, in as much as anything is predictable in this mess, is quite a long delay in the European debate. So Europe will say, we're not giving you another short extension, so you're going to have to take a year, 18 months, 2 years. That will inevitably cause a British general election, because Theresa May has lost the confidence of her party, it would seem, and the premature attack on her in December, constitutionally safe for a year. But there's other ways of exerting that pressure. She's promised to step down to win the vote yesterday, which she failed to do. So in that sense, she may be a beaten docket after she saves us from a crash out. So assuming she saves us from crashing out with no deal in the next 10 days, you then get a long extension, and then she has to go. Now, whether that's just within the Conservative Party and a new leader of the Tories emerges, who then becomes Prime Minister, but their democratic authority is weakened because they haven't run in an election and they haven't run on whatever their new policy position is, the new mandate. So you'd have thought that a general election would be possible. I was going to say likely, but possible in the autumn, in the fall of this year, 2019. And that would give a breathing space, and it would give rethinking time. And it might also, I mean, the people most strongly against it would probably be the DUP, because the value of their 10 votes at the moment, because it keeps Theresa May in power, are immense. And that arithmetic accident is unlikely to be repeated in a forthcoming general election. So there will be a new constellation, and that could be what British politics needs. New people, new policies, fresh start to sort out the mess. Now, it doesn't make the mess any easier, but it does give some clarity of leadership if a stable government is formed after that election.
The European Union most definitely doesn't need to, you know, have a very messy stalemate, you know, no deal strategy for, you know, or outcome, I should say, for what has just happened. What's the bottom line here? Let's follow the money. Ireland, obviously, the Southern Ireland, has behaved rather well and got damn good results in their you know, in their negotiations with Theresa May. That would be number one. Northern Ireland's economy, and for that matter, the UK's economy, is going to go south without a deal. A European Union, one would imagine that they would say, "You ought to know you're more trouble than you're worth, peg off." But that's not reality. Everybody has a financial stake in getting a resolution here. Quentin, what do you think?
Yes, it reminds me of 20 years ago when no one thought that the Good Friday Belfast Agreement was possible. Everyone was saying, you're too bitterly divided. There is such a bulwark of unionism that it can't be moved. There is a strong resentment within nationalism and republicanism causing a civil war, and with a positive aspiration towards a united Ireland. But that's a polar opposite of a united kingdom, and there is violence on the streets, and there are 2,000 prisoners in our prisons, and there are riots military actions every day. You can never solve this. But we did solve it. We did solve it because the driver, and you're right to raise the economics of the Brexit debate, the driver was partly the money, it was partly the war weariness about the conflict, and it was partly the future. I don't want my children to have to go through this. I'm in prison, say, but my kids, therefore, are losing my influence as a parent, and I need to get out of prison. And to do that, I need to settle with my opponents. Now, all of that was done remarkably and brilliantly with fantastic political leadership from the political parties here in Ireland and the two governments, Bertie Ahern and Tony Blair, with the support of the American government, Bill Clinton, George Mitchell, and so forth. So that was done remarkably and is still a beacon around the world for its success. Now, Brexit is very, very different, of course, and it's not about violence, but it is about national identity, it is about sovereignty, it is about what country we belong to and the borders of that country and the laws and making laws or taking laws. So there are parallels that run deep, and so we need a much better process to solve it, not just within the UK, which is draining at the seams with Scotland and the Irish question, but also between the two islands, Britain and Ireland, which the Good Friday structures never really were allowed to develop. The British-Irish Council, the East-West relationships were meant to be as strong as the North-South. So rebuilding that is possible, but it requires a real sense of political leadership and a political will, and that's where our supporters around the world, some of them hopefully listening to this program, can be very helpful at paying attention again, because it's Ireland that will suffer, North and South, if this Brexit mess gets worse.
Can it get worse? Other than just not I'm saying that with obviously the hope that all of us have that something, even we'd settle for a delay 12 days from now, rather than just furthering and mucking up the mess that it is now. Are you hopeful? Are you, if you are representing the citizenry of Northern Ireland, what would you say? Would you still say, God, some sanity will have to kick in the next 10, 12 days, and what the hell, how did we get here? Sooner or later, somebody is going to have to, be accountable for this. What's your... again, let me back up and ask the question, can it get worse? And there's only one final stage that would make it worse, and hopefully we won't be talking about this in 2 weeks' time.
yes, it could get worse, and that would be a no-deal Brexit by some form of accident and failure of the whole system in the next 10 or 12 days to get the delay agreed. So that would be disastrous. The other factor would be business taking its own decisions, even if there were a delay granted. If they were to judge that it would be talk for another year, two years, no certainty, no clarity, no leadership because everyone was so divided, then business and money would start talking and would start relocating and would start shifting jobs and would start going to places where there is political certainty. And that would be catastrophic over the next year, 2 years. And the third really negative potential is if there were a delay and nothing happened, yeah, and we were talking a year or 2 years down the road and we were faced with another deadline in 10 days. And that's where people's frustration would spill over. I mean, remarkably, we've lived here in Northern Ireland without a government, without a devolved government, for over 2 years. And people are frustrated, but life goes on. The buses run, the schools open, the bridges are repaired, the hospitals receive people, they're under pressure, but life goes on. Now, that will not always happen. So if you have a dysfunctional UK system because they can't solve the Brexit question, you've got a dysfunctional Northern Ireland gridlock because we're on hold, we're in stasis, while the bigger players in Europe and the UK work things out. That could be problematic. There could be a return to low-level disaffection, civil disobedience, possible acts of violence. You could get divided communities, and you could get the poverty gap. You asked about following the money. The poverty gap is really stretching the social contract, where those who are left out of the system are doing very poorly, paying huge energy costs, housing costs, transport costs, not doing well at all, suffering in terms of health and education. And those of us at the other end are able to survive these economic shocks. So society is stretched to the limits, and that's why we need the political leadership to get a better solution.
Quentin, Oliver, again, your insight and you fill us in. Not always a good news, but I know that not just our listeners, but your voice, your stratagem, your company, indeed has great influence in far-flung places around the world that we don't even know about. Can I have those who might like to know more about you, about your company, what is the best website to guide those who'd like to know more about stratagem and what you actually do?
Yes, indeed. We're doing some interesting projects around the world. We've got work in Ukraine, which is a red-hot conflict with the Russian involvement. We're working in Macedonia, in the Balkans, in Cyprus, which is a frozen conflict, and other really, really interesting places where the lessons of Northern Ireland are being shared. So the website is stratageminth.com. So that's stratagem, then INT.com. And that'll fill you in with more case studies and examples.
Quentin, thank you. Thank you for filling us in. It would be great if we could have you back in a couple of weeks to say, to tell us that somehow, some way, after it looked like, the bottom was falling out of everything, that sanity kicked in and things are going to be okay. We'd love to have you back with that story. Thank you.
Great. Quentin. Thank you very much.
Okay. Quentin Oliver there, who has his finger on the pulse. And as we know there, this is not... he doesn't, obviously, either exaggerate positively or negatively, calls it like it is. And again, would be great if we could have him back in a couple of weeks talking, you know, about finally a Brexit deal that is signed off, and one that is so significant and important, not just for those living in Northern Ireland, but for the island of Ireland. Okay, let's bring